a program devoted to the most important and largest segment of society. To those of you who've come to realize that all of the world's religious, political, economic, academic, military, and media institutions are corrupt, and that all of these things have become counterproductive and none of them can be fixed. There will be another pandemic. It was interesting. I was watching an editorial last night on the Black Death, bubonic plague, that ravaged much of Europe. This particular episode was focused strictly on the city of London in the 14th century. And it is two aspects of it that were, I thought, particularly interesting. One is that it was people were susceptible to the bubonic plague because of, catch this, climate change. Now, this was centuries before man began burning carbon as fuel. And yet there was climate change. It tells you that climate change has nothing to do with the burning of carbon dioxide, as our production of carbon dioxide is a byproduct of burning fossil fuels. And it truly was a set up by climate change and the famine that caused. Global cooling is a bad thing. The Earth does go through warming and cooling periods. They last anywhere from 300 to 1,000 years. On average, they are about 600 years in duration. And the Dark Ages were dark, principally because of the Earth going through one of these cooling periods. And as a result, there was considerable famine. So the people were set up for it. But the other thing they did is that they have now the capability in the teeth of those who have been recently unearthed who died of the Black Death, the ability to look at the DNA of the perpetrator of the plague. And what they have found is that the bubonic plague that is currently being spread, although slowly, in Madagascar is identical to the bubonic plague that took 6 out of 10 lives in London back in the 14th century. So there will be another outbreak of whether it is a plague or it's a highly contagious form of flu, or whether it is a virus of some sort, there will be a plague that will be devastating. I can't tell you if it's going to occur in the next 5 years. I think that's unlikely. The next 10 years, you're getting to be more likely. The next 15 years, almost certainly. And that it's going to take out many, many millions of people. This particular story prompted me to share this with you. It's a large Los Angeles teaching hospital. This is the one that's associated with UCLA. It's Ronald Reagan. Has scores of patients that may have been exposed to a drug-resistant bacterial, what they call superbug, during an endoscopy procedure that infected 7 patients and contributed to 2 deaths. More than 170 patients who may have been infected by the carbapenem resistance enterobacteriae, or CRE, are being offered home testing kits, and we're going to go to Glenn now because Glenn works in this field, and I am certain can pronounce what I butchered better than I. Hello, Glenn. Good morning.
Good morning, Anna. Yeah, I just saw this, read about this on the weekend. Yes. Welcome to the wonderful world of resistant strain bacteria.
Yeah, and you know, as I understand it, we're developing, or they are developing, they're mutating, such that we are encountering more of them and having running through all of our antibiotics and all of our treatments, and are just sometimes just running out of answers.
Right. The actually went through a little bit of, real quick, 30 seconds on naming convention and history on this stuff.
Yes.
Well, first of all, you'll notice that the CRE, and they're naming these resistant strains of bacteria after the antibiotics to which they are resistant. So we've had CRE. Well, yeah. So when you see, like, for example, well, you had MRSA, the one that, you know, everybody heard, MRSA, methicillin resistant Staphylococcus aureus. And then you had VRE, vancomycin resistant enterococcus. And then you had the nightmare scenario of the genes crossing over from the vanco resistant to the enterococcus into the MRSA, and then you can't use vanco for the MRSA either. So basically they've got all these different drugs, actually I don't have the spelling of the antibiotic for this on the CRE.
Mm-hmm.
So they're naming them after this, but there's been a long history in this, and this is why the docs have been very hesitant. They're very careful about over prescribing antibiotics, because you've had the various ones, vancomycin, methicillin, this one, gentamicin. So they're and then so what they found is sometimes they can do these cocktail things of different meds. Or the special meds. What I don't understand, though, I'm curious about it. I don't really know. But in this age of genetic control, the mapping of the genome and all these splicing of genes and everything, you would think that they could just go into these bacteria. These are bacteria. I mean, compared to a virus, this is an elephant compared to a flea.
Right.
So I would think that they could just go find something that would just go in there and unravel the gene sequences for these things. Why are we, because the antibiotics we use that we use historically from penicillin on have been based on destroying the cell walls or preventing proper cell wall growth of the bacterium. So we've always been attacking the cell walls. Well, why can't they just go right into the heart of the bacterium and unravel its genes? I don't understand why we aren't seeing more genetic weapons for this type of thing. Same thing with antivirals. Why aren't they just going in and unraveling these things?
Yeah, apparently we don't understand enough of them, or are in a position we don't know how to manipulate them. Viruses are strange beasties in that we really don't know if they are alive, if they should be considered life or not. They don't live independently. They can't reproduce independently. And yet they are wired like life, and can certainly grow and multiply when associated as a parasite with life forms. So they're a very strange beastie.
Well, it was interesting during the SARS epidemic, the Chinese, and which then later on we had the Middle East, Middle East that came out of that. During the SARS epidemic, the Chinese government was buying out all available stock and production of a particular silver manufacturer here in the U.S. and tried to buy the company outright, and the guy wouldn't sell, fortunately for everyone else. But in other words, there are so many homeopathic remedies, such as colloidal silver, or the iodine things, or which show promise. I mean, to the point that the Chinese government was buying this stuff up to use for treating SARS.
Yeah. Well, part of it too, of course, is the Chinese culture has always been
receptive to homeopathy.
Yeah, absolutely. So they would have garnered favor with the population of the country had they had a ready supply of that sort of thing. And, these are all natural forms of antibiotics. It's not that man didn't conceive antibiotics. Antibiotics are in natural products. We've simply developed them and purified them and come up with different varieties of them. But the problem, of course, with all antibiotics is that the enemy that they are going after is a formidable foe, and knows how to counter whatever move we make. And who of us hasn't taken antibiotics? You're given a dose of antibiotics. They're hard to get unless you're a doctor or in the medical profession. You have to set an appointment. You got to pay through the nose to not only to buy them, but to have the appointment with the doctor to convince him that you need them. And then when they're gone, they're gone. And so many people, myself included, have shortened the amount that you take so that you have some to knock out something later. That is the thing that is, I guess, the ultimate no-no in terms of conditioning the bacteria to mutate.
One thing I always like to emphasize and try to drive home to people, this is very important. People will have a viral infection, like a respiratory infection or something, right. And the doc will give them an antibiotic. That antibiotic is not for killing the viruses. That antibiotic is to prevent an opportunistic infection by other bacteria that the immune system can conquer. Yahweh's created this amazing immune system of ours, which adapts and uses several different ways of attacking invading microorganisms.
Mm-hmm.
So the antibiotics are not for viruses. We have precious few actual antiviral agents of any kind, you know.
Right.
It always comes down to the immune system that Yahweh created and placed within us. And we have this battle going on with this invisible microbial world that's trying to undo us. And instead of trying to enhance our resistance to this, we have these psychotics, these sociopaths, trying to recruit the microbes as mercenary armies to deploy against people by creating bioweapons.
Oh, of course, yeah, it's amazing that, and of course, the United States was probably at the forefront of the development of these viral weapons. But truly, as you described the battle that goes on in the body and the healing properties that were built into our immune system and the outside infections that can disable it, you're really very similar to the spiritual warfare that goes on and the war of words, the poison that is of words and doctrines and ideas, and you know the Torah being the antidote for those things.
Somebody's trying to scare you. Did you ever get the feeling somebody's, be afraid, be very afraid. Be afraid of measles. Be afraid of syria. It's the other thing. You know, especially, we're all supposed to be afraid all the time. But don't be afraid of vaccination. But be afraid of the bugs. Don't be afraid of the man-made chemicals going in your body. But be afraid of everything else.
Are you one of those that recommends against vaccinations, or are you a proponent? I don't have a strong view other than we got our children vaccinated. I was vaccinated. No negative effects either way, and positive consequences both ways. But what's your stand on vaccinations?
Not an expert, but it's February, and I haven't had a flu shot.
Yeah, you know, the flu shot is one of the things that I'm not particularly good at because what I find is they always prepare it for last year. From one medical story to another. Thinking about killing people all day long must put a damper on a man's sex life. Or at least that is what the recently published report from the U.S. Military Times would suggest. According to the Military Times, data from the Defense Health Agency states that the U.S. Department of Defense spent $42 million on Viagra, $84 million on Cialis, and a total of $300 million for military personnel on erectile dysfunction medication.
Well, you know, Yada, that just goes to show you can't have an army that's shooting blanks.
Good gracious. Can you imagine that? Glenn, I mean to tell you that the U.S. government is so out of whack that it provides $300 million of erectile dysfunction medication to military personnel at the taxpayer's expense. We are paying for them to keep from shooting blanks.
Well, yeah, actually, that's not true. That would have more to do with sperm count. But I'm just picturing the troops,
Full
Metal Jacket. This is my weapon. This is my gun. My weapon's for killing. My gun is for fun. You know, it's my gun is for urination, pretty much, nothing else.
Yeah.
It's really scandalous. I can't imagine that should be necessary.
300. I mean, just talk about how out of whack we are. I mean, first of all, what in the world is going on with men in the military where you've got $300 million being spent on erectile dysfunction medication each year? You know, so much for this macho man these hero types, 300 million?
How many
active military personnel in the United States? What, about 500,000? Something in that range?
Mm-hmm. Right.
500,000 are consumed, and, you know, let's say that of those 80% are men, let's just say it's 400,000 men. 400,000 men are consuming $300 million worth of ding-a-ling boosters?
Well,
courtesy of the taxpayer?
Yes. Well, I'm thinking this is what's interesting is you have an audience, you have a patient base that is very carefully, you know, this chronicled. You have the information right at hand, you know, as opposed to having to look at the civilian sector and compile information across the board some other way. They have these numbers right there at the Pentagon. And you know, just wondering how much, if you compared military males needing this sort of thing compared to civilian males, you know, what's the ratio? What are the comparisons like? And this may tie into, you know, things like delayed stress. It could tie into other endocrine issues. It could tie into things like, you know, BPA and plastics and soy in the food supply and, you know, xenoestrogens that are lowering the male sperm count and altering the endocrine profiles of males and females worldwide. It might be that it's just much easier for this statistic to jump right out there because it's so readily at hand.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is, the vast preponderance of erectile dysfunction medication isn't taken because a man has erectile dysfunction. It's because they want to be studly and do it for an hour as opposed to minutes.
Right.
And that's the reason it's being taken. It's not being it's being taken as a recreational drug.
Right.
It's not being taken because they have an ailment. It's being taken because they have it's a recreational drug. And if you and your spouse want to invest in this form of recreation, and augment it, chemically, that's your choice. But for God's sake, do it out of your own pocket. To tax the American taxpayer $300 million for a recreational drug, and that's what this is. That's preposterous. I mean, it's not quite as preposterous as 600,000 American servicemen and women milking the U.S. taxpayer out of $6,000 a month by claiming post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Right. Well, the PTSD is often slapped on them, not of their own volition, and they thusly then cannot be gun owners as well. So some want it for the money, some don't want it, but it's certainly being used ubiquitously.
1.2 million prescriptions filled in 2004 were for Viagra alone, and Viagra represents a small portion of the overall prescriptions. Back to Shattering This, read this morning that at least 11 students at Wesleyan University, I think that was a Christian school, in Connecticut have been hospitalized over overdosing on the drug MDMA, better known as ecstasy or Molly. At least two of the students are in critical condition and were airlifted to the hospital. Wonderful. I'd like to stay with the U.S. Army. Among active duty servicemen who had ED over the past decade, more than half were diagnosed with, and I quote, psychogenic ED. Psychogenic ED, which means the condition was related to psychological, not physical health problems. I don't know how many different stories I need to share with you before more Americans come to the Jeffersonian position that the single greatest threat to liberty in any nation is an established military. But this next one might open your eyes. The story was sent to me by a regular listener to this program. His name's Jim. He says, this article confirms what you've been saying all along. The article opens with Washington. It's brought to us by CNN. U.S. Army officers often resorts to evasion and outright deception. And everyone at the Pentagon knows it, according to a new study conducted by the U.S. Army War College. I've been saying this now for 15 years. Given the chance to lie or to tell the truth, the officers in the U.S. military will favor the lie. Even if the truth is a better explanation, they're so conditioned to lie, they'll deceive. I remember studying the actual cause behind the first 500 U.S. men and women who were killed in the invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan. And I read what the U.S. Department of Defense wrote, and then I read what those who actually served with those individuals wrote. And I read what was later reported. And there was almost no consistency. What actually occurred and what the U.S. Department of Defense said occurred were always opposites. The Defense Department routinely lies about everything. And so here is the War College of the U.S. Army acknowledging that officers often resort to evasion and outright deception. And everyone at the Pentagon knows it. I mean, I'm not in the military, and yet I recognized it. All I had to do was examine what the Department of Defense said and their public releases and what the men and women who were actually there as witnesses revealed, and to find that they were diametrically opposed almost all of the time. The 33-page report compiled following interviews with officers across the Army concluded that the Army's culture is rife with dishonesty and deception. Let me read that again. This War College investigation report concluded that the Army's culture is rife with dishonesty and deception, and yet we provide them with $650 billion of taxpayer money, much of which is squandered in weapons of mass destruction. And these folks who live in a culture rife with dishonesty and deception wield them. It's no wonder that America's invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq have made bad situations much worse. It's no wonder that we've created a living hell in Iraq and Syria, in Yemen, in Libya. It's little wonder that everything the U.S. military touches crumbles. It's little wonder that America has become the merchants of death of the world. It's little wonder that America is going bankrupt, trying to support a military that is killing it. America's army is a culture rife with dishonesty and deceptions at all levels of the institution, from the most junior members to the most senior Army officers. This is according to the U.S. Army's own report. Folks, it was obvious. Everything that you need to know about the U.S. military has been disclosed in this program. We've told you that they are dishonest from top to bottom. Grossly dishonest, deliberately misleading, deceptive. Told you that it is an environment that is rife with sexual abuse, where a woman is 8 times more likely to be sexually abused in the U.S. military than any place else, and then after she is abused, she has no recourse. She is further abused by the senior leadership, and the perpetrator is only convicted 1% of the time. We've told you that it's an economic scam with 600,000 U.S. military personnel and veterans claiming $6,000 a month for post-traumatic stress syndrome. Go ahead, Glenn.
Well, yeah, none of this should be surprising, whether you're looking at, whether you're thinking that the first casualty of war is the truth, torpedoes in the Gulf of Tonkin, remember the Maine, I mean, how many wars were lied into the wars? So it's, and then we're told that loose lips sink ships, so you don't want facts out there because somebody might say, why don't you tell them the truth? They think that everybody thinks that they're part of, that their information is secret, even when it's not, because I'm secret squirrel. I'm going to keep the truth from that, from the masses,
Yeah, that's why it says that the culture is rife with deception and dishonesty. The culture. So they've created this culture where they justify outright dishonesty. And you're right. Every war that America has fought in recent years, we have gone into that war based upon a pile of lies. And the commander-in-chief, the president of the United States, has deliberately lied to the American people about the justification for the war. And then once we're in the war, we lie to justify our extravagant spending and death tolls in the war. And then we lie about the way that our personnel die so that we can justify staying in the war so that they didn't die in vain. Every bit of it is just nothing but a lie piled on top of a lie piled on top of a lie. And the truth is so far away that we still have Americans unwilling to do the research, unwilling to confront the truth, who still support this evil institution known as the U.S. military.
Right. I kind of grew up with a whole quasi-military Baden-Powell thing. Cub Scouts, Web Blows, Boy Scouts, Air Force ROTC, Air Force ROTC. And then finally, as a young adult, you get to be in your late teens or your late adolescent, early adult, and you start making your own decisions and saying, wait a minute, I can't do this, And, I realized my value system wasn't compatible even then.
Yeah.
And, lies and violence just often go together. And about the women, what is typically historically the relationship between women and the military? What role did women play? They were the camp followers. They fought. Right. They functioned as both hookers and nurses.
Right.
And we didn't see a formalization of the role of the concept of a woman as nurse until the Peloponnesian Wars. I remember nursing school. They talk about.
But in the U.S. military, they are sexually abused against their will, and the culture, because military justice is controlled by the military and not by the civil courts, the perpetrators get away with it.
Right. Well, I would suggest that there's a fundamental gender incompatibility thing going on there. The females are always juxtaposed as, like I said, historically women were camp followers, and then, and they consequently ended up functioning as the caregivers, also. But then we saw the formalization. Look at the MASH era, the Korean War era, where there are women as nurses. Most of them as officers.
In today's world, I've got no issue with women serving in the military. First of all, I've got issue with the military, period. But, a woman should have the same right as a man has to squander their freedom and their lives and to make themselves vulnerable and to destroy the fabric of their morality by joining the U.S. military. They should be, just like you should be free to consume whatever drug rips your brains apart, you ought to be free to make bad decisions, and I think women ought to be as free as men to make bad decisions, but I don't think that men should ever have a license to abuse women, and that's what's happening at about eight times the civilian rate in the U.S. military. It's as bad as Islam when it comes to abusing women.
And that's the heterosexual angle. A friend of mine was an enlisted person. A female friend was enlisted in one of the major services and was constantly fending off lesbian, talking about the lesbian dynamic in the military as well.
It is also a forced homosexual male component to it, too, that is extraordinarily psychologically troubling for many men in the military. The military is really screwed up, folks. I mean, this illusion that we've created to promote patriotism so that we all march off and we acquiesce to the control of our government. None of it's true. I mean, none of it's true.
The whole military lifestyle is contrary to healthy gender relations. It's a Yahweh created Shawa for Adam, you know, and what does he say? You know, the man shall leave his father and mother, meet his wife, create his own household, and they dwell together, you know. How can it be healthy for thousands or millions of men to be sequestered, living with each other, all, you know, in their, you know, young years, when they should be home having sex with their wives, conceiving babies, and raising families?
To be in an organization whose primary purpose is to kill and destroy.
Right.
I mean, how in the world are you going to come out unscathed from an institution that immediately you sign your name, you are robbed of all freedoms? You have no freedom of movement. You have no freedom over your life. You can't even leave them. You have absolutely no freedom. You must follow orders. So you've completely squandered one of the three gifts that Yahweh gave you, which is free will. And then the next thing is that the focus of that institution is killing and destroying. And you are trained to kill and destroy. And then beyond that, you're indoctrinated to see those you kill and destroy as deserving of it. And you're told that you're heroic when you're doing it. How is that any different than Islam and jihad? We have a serious problem, folks. And now what we find is even the military is acknowledging that it's a culture of dishonesty and deception. Kirby, who is the Rear Admiral John Kirby, the Pentagon's press secretary, said 2 weeks ago that Hagel was deeply troubled over ethics investigations in the military, because every time they looked, somebody was stealing money. Somebody was claiming something that was not true, like post-traumatic stress syndrome, like erectile dysfunction, perpetrating gang rapes, claiming that the civilian that they killed was actually pointing a gun towards them, very much like the mentality of our police. And they said, I think he's genuinely concerned that there is a breakdown in ethical behavior and in the demonstration of moral courage in the U.S. military, Kirby said, of Hagel as Hagel left office. Yeah, I guess it's just another thank you for your service type story. It's amazing that this story, which came out, by the way, a little over a week ago, was picked up, this report was picked up by CNN, and then dropped. No one else picked it up. Wasn't on any of the nightly news. Just picked up and dropped. And yet it's as important a story as you could ever hear. That the U.S. military, the culture of the U.S. military, is rife with deception and dishonesty. And yet, between the spy apparatus that they control, the NSA and CIA, and the published military budget, it's $1 billion a year. Is there any wonder that the NSA is run amok and has no clue that there is actually a constitution? Is there any wonder that the commander-in-chief is using drones to kill people by the thousands around the world without trial, without due process? Is there any wonder that with each of our wars over the last several decades, that we have consistently made bad situations much worse? Is there any wonder that the United States is the impetus behind most wars being fought today, supplying the weapons to both sides, often the instigator? And yet, this is the last bastion of human institution in the United States that Americans are still loyal to. It's about 60% of Americans who have been duped into being patriotic and supporting their military. You've been duped. You've been played as fools from every possible angle. Do you know that the U.S. military doesn't have an accounting system? The U.S. military doesn't have a clue what it has in inventory. You know the U.S. military cannot balance its budget. You know that the U.S. military has a, at the end of each year, and it's in the trillions of dollars now, the, well, we just need to present a report to Congress, so we'll have, we'll reconcile this by adding a fudge factor of $1 trillion here, there, and elsewhere. There is no universal accounting system in the U.S. military. They've spent billions of dollars trying to integrate one. They can't do it. From every possible angle, from making bad situations worse to complete corporal, universal deception and denial, to sexual abuse, to monetary abuse, to psychological abuse. No matter how you look, no matter where you analyze it, the U.S. military is perhaps the single greatest threat to freedom, not only in the United States, but the world over. We have become the merchants of death. Our military spending and spy spending collectively outpace the rest of the world combined. And then there is no longer a distinction between the U.S. military and federal agents and the Justice Department and local police. They're all being integrated. Department of Homeland Security, where the FBI and the CIA and Department of Alcohol, Firearms and Tobacco and Customs, Border Patrols, all the same. All with the Justice Department. All to keep control over citizens. All to rob them of their freedoms. What Jefferson stated so eloquently has become, well, it's become who we are. We established a military, and it has robbed us of our freedoms.